I am Digital Dave.
And I'm mostly Fast Eddie.
And joining us is Joe Kimble. That's Captain Joe Kimble.
Right.
I can read.
Good
Morning.
For you.
Of the U.S. Coast Guard.
He's a quick learner.
Not really. But I am trainable.
Sort of.
Yeah. How's the Coast Guard today?
Outstanding. What a great day to be here.
This is your kind of weather. Is that what you're saying?
Sure
it's raining
it sure
and it's nasty and we're going to go fly.
You know, I heard a rumor that if we get any more rain, you guys are going to be able to bring a cutter in here.
So. Yeah, there you go. Yeah. There you go.
So what exactly is your mission and your personal
I'm the
piece
chief
of the puzzle?
I'm the chief of aviation forces for the Coast Guard.
Of all of them?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my. So by the time my name gets on your desk, it's probably not a good thing.
Either that or it's a great thing.
Okay.
We'll take it as a great thing. We need some great things around here. So you get to oversee the flight operations of every piece of aircraft you've got.
That's right. We've got about 27 air stations, about 200 aircraft, 1,000 pilots, and about 3,000 flight mechs. And we are scattered out, you know, everywhere. We fly about 115,000 flight hours every year.
Wow, that was my next question. My goodness, that's a lot of fuel.
I was just thinking that it's got to be a lot of maintenance, too. I mean, you guys are dealing in a very harsh environment with all the salt water and everything.
Right.
So you've got to have a very aggressive anti-corrosion program.
Some of our flight mechs are just amazing. In our process at our logistics center, every 4 or 5 years, we put an aircraft into depot maintenance, and they take it down. And so if you go get a chance to take a look at the aircraft that are over there, they're just in pristine condition. These flight mechanics, they just take amazing care of them.
Well, thank goodness for that.
Yeah.
Got to be a lot of pride in that, and especially seeing as how you're going out in some really rotten conditions at times. I keep referring myself back to the movie The Perfect Storm.
Uh-huh.
You guys went out and rescued a sailboat crew that got into trouble in the middle of a hurricane. Yeah, let's go fly in the middle of a hurricane right. with a helicopter. Uh-huh. Most pilots would say, I don't think so. But you guys, you just load up and go. That's amazing.
Yeah, it's you know, flying in that kind of environment, it's challenging. It's challenging. But you're focused on your primary mission, which is to save the people that entrust their lives to you.
I cannot imagine going out and taking a helicopter into a hurricane, 100 mile an hour plus winds, and trying to pick people up out of the ocean. This is not, you know, your typical day at the beach.
No, it's not.
But it's a typical day at the Coast Guard.
Yeah, that's really.
Right.
I mean,
oh my.
If you want action and adventure, it's obviously the Coast Guard.
How do you train for that?
I think it's just exposure. You know, you train people on the skill sets that we need. We fly a lot of instrument conditions. We fly a lot of, you know, down low underneath the clouds and the helicopters offshore. But you train in extreme hoisting conditions. There's a school we have up in Astoria, Oregon, where we'll send crews to train together in 16, 18-foot, you know, surf that's coming in. They train in the caves so we can get the cave hydraulics. There was a rescue out in Astoria recently where two rescuers went in to save someone and they got in trouble. And one of our H-60s in the newly Centennial paint scheme, it was yellow, went down on the hook and the swimmer went into the cave to get the two rescuers.
Wow.
That took guts.
So
yeah.
But we do probably 14,000 hours of search and rescue every year. It's about 38 hours a day. There's a Coast Guard aircraft flying somewhere on a search and rescue case.
Now, 90% of the rescues are benign weather. It's a mechanical problem or something like that. So, it's the 1%.
Occasionally, you've got to go out in a hurricane or something like that. You're picking up injured people or sick people.
I bet they've had pilots say, I'm not going out there, man. It's too sunny.
Right. Yeah. I was in Coos Bay, Oregon, and we'd go out to grab dinner at night. And, it'd be 60 knots or so. We're going to be going sideways, and you're in the grocery store, and people are looking at you like, okay, are you okay? I'm like, yeah, we're fine. We're good. But explain to people in a helicopter that, you know, with 60, 70 knots of wind, when you lose an engine, it's actually better. You fly easier.
Oh, you got plenty of headwind
exactly.
to spin that rotor.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, my goodness.
I just, you know, I've always admired the Coast Guard. When I worked up in Brooklyn, I watched them training. They were doing a boat lift. Well, not boat lifts, but they were rescuing people in small craft. And it was just amazing to see how precise the hovering has to be for one of these rescues. You're dealing literally in feet with this stuff. And then the videos and everything that I've seen from like Deadliest Catch. Uh-huh. If you're lowering down to a boat, you got to be aware of masts and cables and wires and nets and all kinds of snag stuff out there. It's got to be intense, to say the least.
It is. There's a white knuckle factor for sure. And it takes about 2 years from when a pilot shows up to flight school to get them the exposure they need so they have the control, the patience, and the teamwork with the flight mech in the back that controls the hoist cable. Mm-hmm. And our standardization is amazing. Across the entire Coast Guard, you can take a helicopter from Traverse City, a pilot from Miami, a pilot from Los Angeles, a rescue swimmer from Corpus Christi, and a flight mech from Atlantic City. Put them together in the plane. They will say the exact same things and work together. And it's just beautiful to see the concert together working to do something like
that. Yeah, the
ballet. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's amazing. What kind of aircraft are you looking for in the future?
I'm on a team, you know, I go over to the Pentagon and Coast Guard will put their requirements into the future vertical lift. And we look for things like this. We look for what technology is going to bring. We look for unmanned aerial systems and when they're allowed to fly in the national airspace. There's a lot of talk about these unmanned vehicles and how to operate them. But right now with the airspace concerns, you have to have a certificate of authorization to fly in a certain bubble or window. And I can't predict when people are going to get in trouble, where they're going to get in trouble. And I need that done in 30 minutes. And so as soon as we can have detect and avoid technology that allows us to fly within the airspace, that becomes a viable resource for us.
So that's the next big contract right at this point is RPV.
I think that's still a ways off. I think our helicopters will between next 2035.
How much has the availability of EPIRBs and all the SatNav stuff changed your searching?
It's amazing. The 406 megahertz EPIRB takes a lot of the search out of the search and rescue. You just go right to it. There was a case of four boaters that were trying to roll across the Atlantic, and they were 400 miles north of Puerto Rico, and there's two people in a water tight compartment sleeping and two people rowing at any given time. Lots of safety equipment. They're very well trained. Lots of equipment. For whatever reason, during one time when they switched the watch, both doors were open and two waves came in and flooded both sides and it rolled over. So these professionals are in the water 400 miles north of Puerto Rico. They set up their EPIRB. They try to right the vessel for about an hour, hour and a half. They're like, you know what? It's too much. Let's get in our life raft. Let's inventory our survival equipment. Let's see where we're at. And about 20 minutes later, there was a Coast Guard CASA CN-235 flew over the top. And the rescuers, they came by the air station to say thanks a few weeks later. And one of the things he said was, I was a bit disappointed. I didn't get to try out any of my survival equipment. You guys were there so fast. How'd you do that?
Yeah, you called.
Right.
Well, you know, one of the more interesting aircraft that's out there in the military's inventory is the Boeing V-22. Mm-hmm. Have you guys looked at that for possible use for search and rescue?
We've looked at a lot of different tilt rotor aircraft. We've looked at all sorts of different aircraft with thrust, with vertical thrust, with, you know, trainable propellers. We look at across the spectrum at anything. The big concern for us is when you hoist, the person in the water that's almost near drowning, you've got to come over the top of with these hurricane force winds and not push them under the water. And so you look at disc loading when you're hovering over someone. You look at cargo capacity, speed, distance, time, everything.
So at first glance, it sounds good, but if it's got too much downwash, it's really not.
It depends. It depends if you can redirect the downwash. It depends if you can, you know, approach in an area where you send the swimmer out in front of them so they can get them before you cross in with the rotor wash. But if you get an aircraft bigger than an H-60, you're going to have more downwash. And so keeping it at that gross weight or less is beneficial for the survivor.
Well, I always just thought that it would be a good combination because you've got airplane speeds and hovering capabilities.
Right. That works only, though, if you know where your target is.
Well, that's true.
If you can't search at 400 miles an hour, you go right by them.
Yeah,
right.
But once again, if you've got a guy who's set off his EPIRB,
that
you
far
just,
out.
You yep. just load up and boom, you're there almost instantly.
Yeah, I think there's some definite application for that.
Well, I look forward to seeing a V-22 in Coast Guard colors. I think that'd be pretty sharp. I don't know if I'm going to see one up in New York.
They rescue not only the swimmer, they pull the whole boat out of the water.
They just drop it into the water and everybody walks on board to the tailgate.
No kidding.
But it would, it'd have to be something smaller because that gross weight would just be too much thrust.
Well, Bell, no, was 609? It Bell or, the 609, that's it.
We had a Coast Guard 609 where we tested it out, put a couple rescue swimmers underneath and did a hoist, and they said that the rotor wash underneath was very, very concentrated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a problem.
Yeah. That is the difficulty. Well, who knows?
You could use a Harrier, but they might be a little toasty by the time they got up there.
It'd just evaporate the water around the swimmer, you know? Yeah. Well, I'm sure whatever aircraft you guys come up with, it's going to be something very helpful, and I'm sure you'll save a lot of lives with it. So good luck.
Keep up the good work.
Yes, please do. It's great to see you guys out at air shows and know that you're just flying up and down the coast keeping an eye on things. I'm Fast Eddie.
And this is Digital Dave, and we've been talking with Captain Joe Kimball of the U.S. Coast Guard, and this is EAA Radio.